Okay, it's now time for me to qualify. I sprained my knee Christmas Day, so if I'm leaning on the table, it's because I don't want to lean on my knee. Okay, so I'm Richie, and I'm very grateful for Compulsive Overeating.
Hey, Richie!
And I was talking to Andy before the meeting, way back when this meeting kind of started or was here, it was called the Double Winners Meeting. It was OAAA. So I wasn't sure if that was still it, but I don't care. Because I happen to be a double winner, a triple winner, whatever you want to call it. But my main disease is compulsive overeating. In 1979, I was over 400 pounds, and I crawled into these rooms desperate and hopeless. I tried everything. Everything worked for a little while, and then goodbye, you know. So, and just this is just my story, and I'm going to tell it. And then I got abstinent in July 1979, and when I came in, I got a sponsor who told me what I needed to do. And at that time, everybody had a food plan that was similar to what, how, or what, or why, or whatever. It was just, you know, very weighed and measured and kind of rigid. And I thought it was a prerequisite, so I took that food plan, and I lost a pound a day for about 6 months, and I lost, you know, about 180, 190 pounds. And didn't know any better. And I remember when I lost about 150 pounds, I kind of plateaued. And by then, of course, I was doing aerobics and all the things I could do for most of my adult life. And I said to my sponsor, I said, is there another exercise I could do that I could lose the rest of the weight? And he said, yeah, run up and down the 12 steps. So that's what I've been doing for the last 27 plus years. And that's why I'm reasonably saying today, this has been a really challenging week for my wife and I, with family and injuries and things like that. And I didn't need a drink or use over it. That's the whole thing. And I feel really good. I'm on a food plan now where I weigh in every week. And as a result, somehow I lost 2 pounds last week, you know. So that's God working in my life. My whole life and my whole journey has been to get close to God and stay close to God. And when I first came in, I was one of those people that the book describes of agnostic temperament, to say the least. In other words, my first meeting, I went to a meeting in West Hollywood, and on the podium was the Serenity Prayer, and my friend who brought me, I turned and said, what's this God shit? And she said, hey, what you want, and leave the rest, you know. So I wasn't into the God stuff, and I'd get up every week at the meeting, and I'd say, I lost another 6 pounds, but I'm not into this God stuff like you. And you guys hugged me and said, keep coming back, we love you. We'll love you till you can love yourself. So if there's anybody in this room today that hates yourself like I did when I came in, keep coming back and we'll love you till you can love yourself. And today I love myself as a result of all your love and unconditional acceptance and all that stuff that comes with being an active member of Overeaters Anonymous. So my sponsor is also what they call a big book thumper. And he told me all the answers are in the big book. And if I followed the edicts of the big book and sharing his experience, and he was a 100-pound loser and he was happy. That's what pissed me off. I mean, I had lost 100 pounds or more many times on many bizarre diets. I mean, I go way back to Metrical. Anybody remember that? And I ended up, it was supposed to be a meal, I ended up drinking it with my beer. And the only thing that got me luck with that was the fact that I remember I was working in a department store. Things were foggy. I don't know where I was. I'm, you know, pre-program. I did a lot of wild things. But I remember I used to go to the cafeteria, and the server, it was pounded metric pound, and you put it in milk or water, and they would put it in a morphine machine for me and mix it up. And I remember going one day, and they said the machine was broken, and that I had to shake it by hand. And I shook it by hand, and it didn't work, and I went to swallow it and got a clump and almost choked. So that's the only reason I got off metric. That was like one of many things I tried. And since I'm an Overeaters Anonymous, I have to just say this. The faces in here are blowing me away. First of all, there's two people in here who sponsored me when I lived in L.A. And there's, I just have to say, Michael, who I sponsored years ago, it's in the big book, it talks about seeing the faces of people, the laughter, and the eyes of God working through people. He has grown so much. I just have to point it out. I'm so proud of him, of where he came from and what he is today. And to be a part of lives of people in this room, you know, that I'm looking at, that I just love to death and have loved me to death over the years. So for me, it's a privilege to be here and such a warm, fuzzy feeling to see everybody, you know, who I've interacted with over the years, people that I just sort of meet, you know. And things like that. So I'm just closing out whatever comes in. But so now my sponsor said, here's what we're going to do. I want you to read. I said, you have what I want. How do I get it? He said, I want you to go home, read the beginning of the big book, the introduction, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and call me tomorrow at 7 a.m. So I said, you understand, I'm an actor. If I'm not working, I don't usually get up at 7 a.m. Well, call someone else then. That's the most through him, you know. And then I got home, and I went, well, you know, maybe I'll do it and see what happens. So I did it, and I called him at 7 a.m., and I started doing that every morning. And then one morning I called at 10 after, and he said, what time do you have? I said, 10 after 7. He said, call me tomorrow on time, and hung up. But I did, you know. And then I'm just going to jump forward. Over the years, I changed sponsors a couple of times, and the sponsor in this room, who I asked to sponsor me at the time because she had what I wanted, she said, I want you to do a 10-step, a written 10-step, and call me in the morning. And she outlined it for me. And I said, well, you know, I do the 10-step like it is in the big book. You know, we review our day with God. We ask where I've been selfish. She says, well, I want you to do this one. And I go, well, I'm not sure we can work together. And I hung up. And all of God said, she has what you want, you ask how she got it, she tells you, and you say no, you know better. So I called back and said, okay, I'll do it. And that's a 10-step I've been doing ever since for many years. And I'm sure some of you are familiar with it. It's called AEIOU, which is, you know, what is my abstinence, what exercise did I do today? What did I do to take care of myself? Today I'm going to a meeting, I pray, I meditate, I call my sponsor, it's all self-care. O is great, how I interact with other people. So did I have, you know, did I tell Time Warner to go screw themselves today because they were late for the appointment? Or was I a kind, loving, accepting, understanding person? And then you, I uncover my feelings, you know. And I always start that with I feel and see what comes out. And sometimes it's a sentence or two, sometimes a paragraph, it could be a couple of pages. And I ended up with three things I'm grateful for, and a Yahoo, And it's so funny, because over the years when I pass this on to others, some call them a wow, a yippee, you know, something that happened today. Like, my Yahoo today was meeting, seeing my two former sponsors, and everybody else in this room who I love so dearly. You know, that's like a Yahoo. So I do that, and then the next morning I call my sponsor and I read it to her. And now my sponsor's in Nashville, Tennessee, you know, so I get around. And so what am I doing? I'm using the phone, I'm using writing, I'm using the tool of sponsorship, I'm using the tool of, there's other tools in there. But anyway, it's been a part of my life for 27 plus years to get up and use the tools, prayer, meditation, anonymity. Anonymity is simple to me. It's not that thing about if I meet you in the street, I can't say, oh, I know him from OA. It's about being in the right size, knowing that I'm not any better than anybody in this room. I'm not any worse than anybody in this room. I'm just another one of God's kids like everyone in this room. And if you don't believe it, just keep coming back, work this program, and God will do for you what you couldn't do for yourself. So getting back to my agnostic temperament, I just kept doing what he told me to do. And I remember when he had me read How It Works, he said to underline what I thought was important. And I said, okay. And he said, read it to me the next day. So rarely have we seen a person fail who was thoroughly followed up. He said, what did you underline? I said, rarely and thoroughly. He said, well, read it like it's underlined. So I said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly. He said, that's better. Followed up there. And I got to the part of those who do not recover, people who cannot, will not. And then it says, here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. And I love suggested, because if you tell me what to do, I'll do the opposite. But suggested is good. And God bless my first sponsor, who said, well, here's the suggested. Here's an analogy. You're driving on the freeway, and a cop car comes behind you and flashes his lights. He's suggesting that you pull over. Said, you don't have to. Strongly suggested. So that's what I suggest you do with these steps. And then he said, but that suggestion, he said, I want you to underline took. So I go, all right, here are the steps we took that are suggested as a program. He said, okay. It doesn't say here are the steps we analyzed. It doesn't say here are the steps we theorized. It doesn't say here are the steps we discussed with a bunch of people and got them to see it our way. Here are the steps we took. And if you take these steps the way they're written, you will get the promises of this program. Well, I set out to prove it wrong. And I took these steps. And I'll never forget, because by then, you know, I was losing weight rapidly. And people were asking me to speak at meetings and things like that. I remember doing a marathon in, I think it was Pasadena or Glendale or somewhere. And I was one of, like, four speakers. And afterwards, people came up and said, I took your number. I'd like to talk to you about God and your spiritual recovery. I said, no, I'm the guy that's lost all the weight. No. I really like your spiritual being. So what happened was, and the book tells you that people will see it in you before you see it in yourself. And people were seeing the God in me before I even acknowledged that there was a God in this world, you know? And what happened was, I woke up one day, and I was maybe 180 pounds lighter, happy, joyous, and free, and I suddenly realized that God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. So now, once I realized that, now the trick is, how do I stay close to God and let him work through me in all my affairs, you know? And that's another thing. The 12 steps as we carry this message to other compulsive overeaters and practice these principles in all our affairs. So one of my sponsors along the way said, if you can't practice these principles, in all your affairs, have less affairs. That's pretty simple. And the affairs go to things like with my family. I have, 27 years working these steps, trying to stay close to God, trying to practice these principles. I have a tough time with my family. I still have a tough time with my family. Part of it is because when I was in my disease, I abandoned my two daughters for 10 years completely. They didn't know where I was. I didn't know where I was, Then their mother got sick and died in that interim. And, there's a lot of healing to do, but there's a lot of baggage that I still carry. And it hurts me. It hurts me with my daughters. It hurts me with my grandkids, And just a day at a time, I have to say this year, more than anything, I've been praying for unconditional love and acceptance of them, and not to criticize and judge them to the best of my ability. And somewhere around 6 months ago, I woke up, and it really happened. I really felt compassion and forgiveness instead of anger, that they're practicing their disease. They're both, health risks and stuff like that. But the main thing is that they felt that I, to a degree, stopped criticizing and judging them. My one daughter, whatever I'll do or say will never be enough. And I have to always remember that. We're out here for a couple of reasons. One of them is to have spent Christmas with them, etc. And I have other friends and people that I need to see and want to see, and to them that means that I don't want to be with them. Like, I hurt my knee. I had x-rays. I went to the doctor. I ended up, he said I needed an MRI. I took an MRI yesterday. So the other day, between the knee and the emotional stuff that I'm going through and my life, I said to my daughter, I need a day off, I just need to rest. Well, so that was Thursday. Yesterday she said to me how deeply hurt she was that I needed a day away from them. And that's not what I said, and that's not what I meant, but that's how she heard it. And I said, I'm sorry, that I don't live up to your expectations, but it had nothing to do with you as much as that I needed a day off from everything to just rest. So these are the things that I'm still working through. If it wasn't for this program and sponsors and friends in this program that give me feedback, from an objective point of view, I would be, 400 pounds dead, stoned, who knows what I'd be. But today I'm reasonably sane, and I'm health-wise, I'm at the best health, so I have to talk about that. So I lost all this weight, and I kept it off being perfect for about 10 years. And then I went through a heart surgery, which I would have died. People say if it wasn't for OA, I'd be dead. I'm in that class. So I had open heart surgery, and I had a great attitude about the recovery. But somewhere in there, I started experimenting with certain foods. And somewhere along the way, 10 pounds came on and stayed off of it. And I found myself 50 or 60 pounds back. And for me, I didn't believe in starting over. I believed in just, and I'm sure you heard this before, but I said to my sponsor, I feel really guilty, having this weight on. And he said, well, it's not a mortal sin, it's a culinary indiscretion. So I've had many culinary indiscretions along the way, which have caused me weight gains along the way. And as a result, I rationalize, and I think that I'm emotionally and spiritually fit, and I try to work these steps and use the tools of the program to the best of my ability. And I write about it, and I just didn't think it was emotional, and I still don't know what it is, but I put on 50 or 60 pounds. But I was still well over 100 pounds off my body, So I rationalized that's a good recovery, you know, what the hell? I mean, I'm keeping off over 100 pounds for 25, 26 years. Where else could you do that? And then we have a doctor in North Carolina who just said to my wife, you know, if you lose 20 pounds, you'll feel 20 years younger. So I said, well, if I lose 50, So he also recommended a food plan that many of his patients had been successful with. Now, you know, I knew LA, I had food plans, I'd been successful in LA, but somehow God made me open-minded and willing enough to try it. So that was 6, 7, 8 months ago. I tried it, and here I am to lose about 50 pounds, you know. So that is after 27, 28 years. So if anybody's struggling with the fact that you're fluctuating with weight or your physical recovery isn't where it's supposed to be, I guess God has a time schedule for all of us to be willing to change. And that's what happened to me. And it's, you know, we live in three different places right now. North Carolina, Tennessee, and New York. How's that for a balance, right? And as a result, we travel a lot. As a result, you know, we're out here. And this particular food plan I'm on allows me to be flexible enough to eat anywhere, in any city, in any town. I'm very happy that I'm where Kukuru Chicken is today. There's no Kukuru Chicken outside of California, you know. But I do find places like that. And it's all about, you know, working the program, doing the writing, committing my food every day, and sticking to my commitment. And in this meeting, when we qualify what our abstinence is, I heard someone once share their abstinence is 3 meals a day with a snack and to abstain from situations that make them want to eat. And we just heard at a meeting recently, someone said, if you're not hungry, food isn't the answer. Something like that. What was it? Could you tell me?
If hunger is not the problem,
food is not the problem. Thank you. Okay. If hunger is not the problem, food is not the answer. But someone at this meeting also said, when they qualified, they said, find a food plan you can live with. Make a commitment to that food plan and live with the commitment. And if you can't live with the commitment, change the food plan. Well, that's what happened to me, you know. I mean, I started out on a gray sheet, then I got into 3 moderate meals a day with, you know, a snack, and then I heard someone say they started out with 3 banquets a day and nothing in between. But I have to have some kind of boundary. And today I have those clear boundaries. I know exactly what I could eat, what's best for my health. And it has, vanity's great. It's nice when people say, wow, you look great. And I like the way I personally look in clothes today. But it's about health. You know, I hate to say this, but I'm 72 years old, you know. I don't feel it, I don't think it, I don't live it like I'm 72 years old. And my wife, I think, will retire this year, and we want to have a long, healthy, active life, you know? And we don't even call it retirement, we call it the next stage, you know? And so that's why I want to eat healthy, live a healthy lifestyle. The thing that's killing me about the knee is I don't get to exercise just for today, and I'm not going to gain 50 pounds because of it. I just have to just keep as healthy a lifestyle as I can. And that's what it's all about. And nothing has given me a basis for that more than Overeaters Anonymous. You know, the tools of the program, the steps of the program, the attitude. I mean, 3 gratitudes a day isn't enough for me. I have so much to be grateful for. I have so many yahoos that go during the day. I mean, just as I'm driving my life crazy since this recent weight loss, because I'll say things to her, look how easy I fit in this seat, like, you know, the bone of the game Monday to the Rose Bowl. I remember when I was 400 pounds, I had to sit on the end seat because they have like slabs of concrete with numbers on them, and I would overlap at least two numbers, you know, if not more. So just little things like that, crossing my legs in an airplane, you know, just going to the men's room in the airplane, which was so painful for me, having to ask for an extension on the seatbelt, all those things, going to an amusement park, all these things that carrying all that excess weight did. And then, you know, you hear people say, well, think about carrying a 50-pound bag of sand and walking around. So here I am, I really strained my knee bad. And instead of getting angry and upset about it, I was grateful that if I was 400 pounds, I would still be laying in the backyard of my daughter's house and be carried out on a stretcher. And that's what God does for me today. And, you know, and I can't say enough about, all right, I'm going to stop in a minute. I can't say enough about the fellowship. I can't say enough about how you guys loved me till I could love myself. I could never say enough about walking into a room like this and being unconditionally loved and accepted, no matter what I do. And I remember one someone getting up at me and saying, where else can you go to say? I went to Baskin Robbins and ate every flavor they had. Then I went home and threw it up. Then I got to the meeting and went home. That's what all the reason happened. You came from Sweden. How great is that? Someone from Sweden's here. So whatever you throw, whatever you're doing, know that you have a place where we embrace you. You know, welcome Elvis Anonymous, welcome home. So thanks. This is a time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are his and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Okay? Yes.
Can you speak a little bit about the balancing act between being together with yourself and being in denial?
Being what?
In denial.
Yeah, but what was the first
part? Being together with yourself.
Oh, okay. The question is, can you explain the balance between being gentle with yourself and being in denial? My experience is it's a very thin line and it's very hard. But as I shared earlier, being gentle with myself was not giving up and leaving Overeaters Anonymous and just saying, well, this is how it is today, and getting feedback from sponsors, whatever, as to, you know, where they're at and what they think. And there was someone in these rooms who I was very privileged to, you know, lead some OA retreats and conventions and stuff, and this person really admired me. And she said, I really admire you, but it's hard for me to see that you're still overweight, and how can you be spiritual? And that like woke me up to the fact that, well, you know, and this is true in my experience, that when I was being gentle with myself, realistically, I was separating myself a little bit from God. Every extra bite I took clogged up that clear path to let God work through me. And you know, the St. Francis prayer, the 11-step prayer, is one of my favorite prayers. And if I want to be a channel of peace and harmony and hope and faith and light, I can't be bogged up by questioning, am I being gentle or am I in denial? So I think God gives me the message. And it took me a couple of years of carrying that extra weight and being gentle with myself for God to say it's time to make the change. Yes.
How do you practice your 10, 11, and 12 on daily basis? What's
your name?
Cheryl.
Cheryl asked, how do I practice 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis? Well, the 10 step I explained. I write the 10 step every day, and then I share it with my sponsor. Step 11 is my prayer and meditation. I have to say, I used to get on my knees every day for 20-something years, and then I got tired of that. But sometimes I'll get up in the morning, just lay in bed, and say the prayers, you know. And yesterday I was doing an MRI, and I had to be in there 28 minutes. And I said the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, and the St. Francis prayer, and the Serenity prayer a dozen times or so. And each time I timed out how long it took to say the prayer. And sometimes I just say, God, I offer self to thee, build me, do me now, will me, leave me in the bondage of self, I better do thy will, take away my difficulties, break thee over them, dear ones. Those are help of my power, the love of my way, life. Amen! And that's it. And sometimes I go, God, I offer myself to thee. What does that mean? What do I mean by that, God? And I'll talk to God about it. And do that on my prayers, you know. And like I say, some days it's the, you know, that rushing, and some days it's just meditating on each word and asking myself, have I been a champion of peace and harmony? Have I been that? And then my first couple of months in this program, I was given meditation books. At that time, OA didn't have their own, so I was using AA. Called Day by Day, 24 hours a day. Someone gave me, I shared, this is something I was sharing at meetings. I shared at a meeting I was having trouble with my family. And someone gave me a book, One Day at a Time in Al-Anon, you know. And I don't want to offend anyone, but someone just told me, try an Al-Anon meeting. And I went, and it didn't work for me. And that's because my dear friend Natalie told me the Al-Anon salute was... And that's how I felt about the group. So, but those books still on a daily basis helped me. And now I read Just for Today, and I read Voices of Recovery, you know, and I have books. We live in three different places, and I have books wherever I go. I have meditation books. And, you know, early in my recovery, a sponsee gave me a gift of an altar with incense, you know, to meditate by, and I would fall asleep like that. Didn't work for me. I've been to meditation meetings. Didn't work for me. Someone recently in a meeting said at a meditation meeting, they were the first ones to peek to see if everybody had the right. So my step 11 has been reading the meditation books every morning and praying to the best of my ability. And I'm, you know, far from perfect, but that's what I do. And step 12, when I learned the principles of the program, which is a little different than it is in the 12 and 12 of OA, was the principles behind step 12 are charity, love, acceptance, gratitude, and unselfishness. And when I practice those principles, that's how I work step 12 every day. Well, I took a week off because of our schedule, but I talk to 4 to 5 people a day, sponsors, sponsees, etc. And I do service to the best of my ability in the program. And I've always sponsored people. I'm never without a few people I sponsor, and I'm never without a sponsor. So I practice those principles. You know, charity is giving of myself, not necessarily financially, but giving of myself. You know, love, unconditional love, understanding is so important. In the St. Francis prayer, it says, Lord, grant that I may seek to comfort rather than be comforted, to understand and to be understood, and to love and to be loved. That's how I deal with my family, to try to understand that my daughter and grandson and son-in-law are all practicing their disease to the hell. And the big book says, what about those that are spiritually sick like ourselves? We need to treat them like sick people. So I need to do that love and compassion. And that's how I work 10, 11, and 12 every day. Thanks.
Thank you.
Your name?
I'm Julie.
Hi, Julie.
Could you talk a little bit more about how you made the transition from being Gnostic to having the faith that God
was real? The question is how I made the transition from being an agnostic to having the faith in God that I have today, right? Well, the 12 steps. It was really that simple. Like I said, I hated myself. I was so hard-headed and hip-slick and cool that I set out to prove that this didn't work for me. And like I said, I worked the steps. Fourth and fifth step was a big, big, big change for me. To reach that level of trust in another human being to share my deep, dark secrets. And I had a lot of crap that I, you know, abandoning two little girls at age 2 and 5 for 10 years about, and my wife dying and not even being there and stuff like that. It was real hard, but the love of a sponsor who said to me, you know, when I was 15, I was working after school part-time, and my mother was very sick, and my grandfather, they brought me up, were both very sick. They died within a month of each other. And I remember when my grandfather died, my foreman came over and said, your aunt called, they want you at home, your grandfather died. And I fell to pieces. And they had to drive me home. I used to take a subway. I lived in the Bronx, New York. And exactly 30 days later, they said, my aunt called again, and they wanted me to go to visit my mother in the hospital to come home. Now, I used to visit her every night, and it sounded weird. And I got on the subway, and the thought came to me, something's wrong. Maybe she died. And then I said, you know, I hope she died. Then everyone will feel sorry for me. I won't have to work in a factory. I'll get her insurance and all that. And I got home, and as I walked in the door, I heard my aunt say, yeah, well, first my father, now my sister died. Well, I carried that guilt that I wished my mother was dead, and I killed her for all those years. That was one of the many things I was trying to anesthetize myself over. And when I shared that with my sponsor, he told me about his thing and how he wished, you know, everybody says, I wish our kid was dead, you know, and I didn't kill her. And then I remember sharing at a big convention in New York at the Concord Hotel in front of 2,000 people what I just shared today. And 20 people came to me that weekend and said how it helped them, because they too had the same kind of experience. And that's when I just felt free. I felt free of all that shame and guilt that I carried for so many years. And then just working, you know, 6 and 7, looking at my defects, and making amends was another big thing. And what does it say in the book? After step 9 is the promises of the program. We suddenly realize God is doing for us what we could. So that's the process that I went through. That's what it takes. And it's simple, but not easy. Thanks. Yes. And your name?
Hi, Tricia.
Hi, Tricia.
Could you talk kind of about the anger and resentment that you weren't there for when you did it?
The anger and resentment
of the other person
that I couldn't be there for. I could talk about that, because my daughter still holds a big anger and resentment. In fact, I was so fortunate in these rooms. I met a wonderful woman, and I lived here, and she was here at the time, and she was moving back to New York, and we thought, thank God, we don't have to deal with commitment, you know. I was single for like 30 years or more. And what happened was God had different plans, kept pulling us together wherever we went, Florida, New York. And I made a decision that I wanted to be with her. So it was a tough decision, because my kids are out here and my grandchildren are out here, and I was very active in my grandson's life from when he was an infant. And as a result, I made a decision that I needed to move back to New York, because my wife had to live there and I didn't. I was an actor in between projects for about a year, you know. But I wasn't working, and it didn't matter because my career was kind of waning down, and New York was a good place to be an actor anyway. So I made a decision to move, and I told all my kids individually why. And, you know, at that time, my grandson said, "I want you to be happy," which made me feel good. My younger daughter said, "You have a right to be happy." And my oldest daughter said, "Well, here you are abandoning your grandchildren just like you abandoned me." So that's like a lot of anger. And I said, "You know, I'm sorry you feel this way, but I do have a right, you know, to be happy." So to this day, she loves me, my wife. Well, maybe not today. But but she didn't resent my wife like she resents me, you know. And I think I shared earlier, whatever I do for Stacey will never be enough. And I've made my living amends. I mean, in the last 20-something years, I've been the kind of father that I want to be. I've been the kind of grandfather I want to be, that I think God wants me to be. And I try to, you know, someone once shared in this program, live your life as if God is looking over your shoulder. So that's what I try to be. So I try to live with a lot of forgiveness. They're sick people. They're not bad. My daughter has a heart of gold underneath all the anger and resentment. My youngest daughter has dealt with it, you know, through counseling and stuff like that. And she has a much, I think, a much more respectful relationship for me than my other daughter. She will never forgive me. And that's okay. Because I've forgiven myself, and God has forgiven me. God never judged me. And everybody, you know, that's the key, I think, is to self-forgiveness. Doesn't matter what other people do or say. Yes?
Could you share...
What's your name?
My name's Cindy.
Hi, Cindy.
Could you share your traveling and how you dealt with being abstinent in all these different places?
Yeah. The question is, will I share my traveling and how I kept abstinent in all these places? Well, one thing is carry wassa crackers and soy cheese on every airplane and fruit and to plan ahead, you know. An old saying, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Well, I know, like I know in L.A. what I can get, where I can get it. Fortunately, we're in a hotel where down the street is a Wild Oats. They're shopping in Wild Oats. Every hotel room we have has a mini bar, which we immediately empty and use for our own fruit and foods that we have in the room in case of an emergency. And then it's about humility and pride. Pride says when people say, "Oh, we're going to this Mexican restaurant," and I go, "I can handle it." Bullshit. I can't handle it. So I have to say, Mexican food doesn't agree with me. How about if we find another neutral place? And it's about humility, and it's about preparation, and wherever we go. I mean, Knoxville, Tennessee, where my wife resides half a week or so, when you say I want just plain vegetables, that comes with gravy and so you got to be real specific. And again, it's about humility. And I remember in this room, we used to go around with 100-pound losers, and we went to a restaurant, and we would order specifically, and the waitress would say, "Oh, you on a diet?" And one of my friends in OA said, "Oh, no, I'm allergic to that food." She said, "I break out in fat." So if you go to a restaurant, you get specific, they go, "You on a diet?" If you use the word allergic, they go, "Oh, I'll check and make sure there's no sugar in that salad dressing." And those are basic things. I have to end now. So thank you again.